Good morning. The March 31st, 2021 Operations and Customer Service Committee meeting will now begin. For the record, this is a virtual meeting and all board members and participants are by telephone. I will now take roll call. Vice Chair Fulton?
Here.
Board Member Gordon?
Here.
Board Member Rasmussen?
Here.
Board Member Caulfield?
Here.
Thank you. And Board Member Nara is absent at today's meeting. Operator, we would like to open the floor for public comments. Can you please provide instructions for entering the queue to make a public comment?
Ladies and gentlemen, the floor is now open for public comments. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to enter the queue. You will hear a brief tone to indicate you have successfully entered the queue. Priority access will be given to any participant who has pre-registered, and these comments will be taken in turn. We will then take public comments from remaining participants on a first-come, first-served basis. Each person will have 2 minutes for their public comment. A warning will be provided when 15 seconds remain. Once again, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue to make a public comment. There are two speakers in the queue. Your first public comment is coming from Joseph Clift. Your line is live, and your time begins now.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Joe Clift. I have two issues today. One is an old one, and one is a new one. The old one is the report on missing trains from the current New Jersey Transit schedule that was promised 2 months ago to the committee members and is due from staff. And the second is repair and upgrade of the Hudson Tunnel now. On the missing report, you have a class of engineers graduating in April, sometime this coming month. That will put New Jersey Transit a full complement of engineers. So any trains that are not running, some as far back as January of 2018, could be running. And the simple request I have, and I hope what this report will provide, is, first of all, a list of the trains that are missing as far back as 2018, and then a discussion of how those might be brought back into service and what the requirements are for doing that. My second issue on the tunnel, I'm sure all of you, New Jersey Transit is very good, I'm sure, at providing you information. I'm sure you saw a story from the AP's Dave Porter on weekend work. He went down and saw weekend work in one of the Hudson Tunnel tubes, removing 400 feet of track bed. That means rail, ties, and ballast, then repairing leaks and putting it all back together again, all in a 55-hour weekend. This proves that major work can be done by Amtrak in the tunnels on weekends. I urge you to read the London Bridge Associates report that came out November 23rd, 2020, because it talks about doing everything planned for improving the tunnels on weekends. This 400 feet of work, which is done very manually,
15 seconds,
simply shows that the London Bridge report is correct. Politicians that claim it is not haven't read it. I urge you committee members to read it. Thank you very much, and have a great day.
Thank you. Your next public comment is coming from Adam Reich. Your line is live, and your time begins now.
Good morning. First off, I wish to follow up on a couple of items I've brought up previously, one being the vacancy in the customer advocate position. I know, as I recall, Board Member Gordon and Board Member Nara did express interest in providing a public update. I don't believe there was one at the last committee meeting or at the last board meeting, so I'm wondering if there's any information you have for us today in that regard, particularly a timeline for filling that vacancy. I know there was some disinterest in that from some members of the public, but at the same time, it is a position mandated by statute, so it is something the agency should look to fill and do so with due diligence. Secondly, I know there was interest expressed by a couple of board members about including some reference to complaints in the written agenda for the committee meetings. I don't see that here. I'm wondering if that's still something that you're hoping to move forward with? And if so, is there a timeline? You know, it would be good to see, for example, recurring issues that are reported on social media, like closed cars on trains. You know, if there's some acknowledgement and some indication of what the follow-up looked like for that procedure in the written report, I think it would go a long way. I do want to take a second and commend at Princeton Junction the Saturday before last, when low-level boarding was in effect due to the installation of platform extensions. The employees you had there were very diligent at ensuring customers moved to the right end of the platform and also, you know, complied with the face mask mandate. It does raise a question, which is, you know, basically what happened is the extension was partially installed overnight, and then low-level boarding was in effect during the day. I'm wondering long-term, if these outages happen in the future, is there a way to provide for high-level boarding via the partially installed platform so that customers with disabilities could use level boarding and customers with luggage don't have to haul it down the stairs from the low-level platform and then back up the stairs onto the train? Beyond this, I am noticing on station platforms, I think, as we're seeing in other areas of society, a level of pandemic fatigue with people either having their masks down or not on. As a customer, you know, there's only so much I can do. You know, some people are, many people are very good at pulling up a mask, but there are others who are, you know, either ignore you or just are hostile to that. I'm wondering if there's anything that can be done from a messaging standpoint or an enforcement standpoint, particularly at suburban stations where I'm not sure to what degree the NJTPD is able to patrol or if there's a way to expand the mask force beyond the current time frame.
There are no more public comments.
Thank you, and thank you, public speakers. The first staff report is the Operations and Customer Service Update, Anthony Greco.
Good morning, board members and members of the public. Anthony Greco here. We'll be presenting the February Operations and Customer Service Committee report this morning. Deanna Sumner from iTeam, who heads up customer service, will moderate and provide the customer service updates. And the heads from each of the operating divisions will report out on their respective areas. With that, I'd ask everyone to turn to the next page, and I'll turn it over to Jim Sincaglia to begin with the rail report. Jim?
All right. Thank you. So the following on-time performance metrics across all modes reflect the impact of the two winter storms. Overall daily ridership on rail remains at approximately 20 to 25% of pre-COVID levels. Starting with the charts for rail, on-time performance was 91.8% in February, down slightly from 93.9% for January 2021. The 12-month average for rail on-time performance was 93.6%. Contributing causes for delays were primarily weather-related. On the equipment side, mean distance between failure, or MDBF, in February was 84,529 miles, down from January's 86,531. Moving to rail performance by terminal and time, New York Penn Station trains reported overall on-time performance of 91.7% in February, down slightly from 91.9% in January. Hoboken Terminal trains reported overall on-time performance of 92.3% in February, down from 95.6% in January. System-wide trains reported off-peak on-time performance of 91.1% in February, down from 93.8% in January, and weekend service on-time performance was 95% in February from 96.6% in January. Again, on-time performance was significantly impacted by the two winter storms. Among the key rail training issues based on customer feedback were facility and station conditions, delays and cancellations, and cars close to customers. Based on our analysis of the feedback, the delays and cancellations, as well as the facility condition comments, were largely related to the winter storms. Some rail lines and stations had near-record snow totals of approximately 30 inches, that made keeping up with snow removal more challenging. In particular, we heard from several customers about the conditions at Brick Church Station. We dispatched a second crew to the station as soon as the reports were received to ensure station platforms were cleared and salted. The other issues we heard from customers related to rail cars being close to customers. We have a specific policy in place with regard to maintaining a sufficient number of cars open and available to customers. On weekdays, all morning and evening peak hour trains must have all cars open to maximize distancing on board to the greatest extent possible. During off-peak hours and on weekends, conductors are required to have a minimum number of cars open based on ridership and crew size. During off-peak hours, ridership is lower and train crew sizes are reduced to better align with the lower ridership. If at any time off-peak train capacity reaches 50% and a car is available but closed, crews are required to open the closed car and make it available to our customers. The 50% capacity rule applies each time that percentage is reached and there are closed cars available to be opened. We expect crews to comply with that policy, and we follow up on each individual report of cars closed and take the appropriate corrective action to ensure compliance. We are also advancing track work and maintenance programs to maintain system reliability and state of good repair. Beginning Saturday, March 27th, and continuing every weekend until Sunday, May 2nd, with the exception of April 3rd and 4th, we are completing bridge deck maintenance and track replacement between Long Branch and Belmar. We have advised customers of the construction, as well as potential service delays of up to 30 minutes in both directions between Long Branch and Bayhead, as well as potential delays for trains operating from Long Branch to New York that may also be delayed if the connecting Bayhead shuttle is late. Earlier this month, we completed track work on the Raritan Valley line between Cranford and Newark and provided substitute shuttle busing for customers, as well as provided NJ Transit ambassadors at the affected stations throughout the weekend to assist customers in completing their travel. Moving to the next slide, I will turn it over to Mike Kilcoyne and the bus report.
Thanks, Jim. Moving to the bus charts, on-time performance with 98% in February, down slightly from 98.9% in January. The February 12-month rolling average for bus on-time performance was 98.2%. Despite a decline of approximately 50% in overall ridership, more than 4.9 million passenger trips were delivered by New Jersey Transit buses statewide for the month of February 2021. Again, on-time performance statistics for this month should be put into the context of the reduction in traffic on major arterial roadways, so that volume is increasing incrementally. Given the storm impacts and road conditions, such as Deanna described, we did see some slight drops in on-time performance for our major terminals in February, but all were above our goal of 90%. The Port Authority bus terminal's performance was 98.2%, which was down slightly from 98.6% of buses departing on time. Hoboken Terminal's on-time performance was at 98.8%, down from 99.8%. Atlantic City on-time performance registered at 99.2% from 99.6%. Newark Penn Station on-time performance was slightly down to 99.1% from 99.6%. Walter Rand Transportation Center was down slightly to 97.9 from 98.9. And Irvington on-time performance was 93.7%, down from 97.6%. Delays were incurred largely due to the weather events and resulting road conditions. We identified three trends in feedback in February. The first involved feedback about bypasses in the Northern Division in Bergen County, specifically on the 161 and the 166 bus routes. Each bypass complaint was investigated using our Clever Devices technology and deploying road supervision at locations where bypasses were reported. Operators were identified and corrective action taken. Road supervision has been assigned to monitor these stops for compliance. The second trend in feedback we identified was related to bus stops and shelters, and these complaints were almost entirely related to snow impacts from February's winter storms. The feedback indicated certain bus stops and shelters did not have snow removed or could not be accessed. Each complaint was forwarded to supervision in our bus stop signs and shelters department, who have contacts within municipalities where stops and shelters are located. As part of the agreements in place between New Jersey Transit and the municipalities, New Jersey Transit purchases and constructs shelters at no cost to the municipality, and the municipality agrees to maintain the shelters, which includes snow removal at shelters as well as bus stops. The third trend we identified was related to reports of some trips not operating. The current number of operators quarantining and or positive for COVID-19 has had an impact on operator availability. There are currently 70 operators that are positive or absent for COVID-related absences. So while these trips impact just a fraction of 1% of the approximately 14,000 scheduled weekday trips, we've taken measures to mitigate the impact to customers to the greatest extent possible while the pandemic continues. Whenever a bus trip is unable to operate for any reason, the decision is made to strategically reduce service on high-volume lines to minimize the impact to the customer. For instance, garage supervision focuses on routes with high service frequencies when the need to eliminate a trip exists. Many routes operate with frequencies of 2 and 3 minutes between buses. We also consider the trips with unique destinations and ensure that they operate. With overall ridership currently hovering around 50%, the decision to cancel a trip on a route with high frequency has the least impact on customers on the affected trip and is only done as a last resort. New Jersey Transit continues to advance its zero emissions bus program, and in February released a request for proposal for the purchase of 8 battery-powered electric buses to be used as part of a limited deployment in the city of Camden. These buses are our first acquisition to comply with Governor Murphy's Energy Master Plan to combat the impacts of climate change by transitioning to zero emissions vehicles. The Camden limited deployment will enable New Jersey Transit to study the unique benefits and challenges of using zero emissions vehicles in a real-world setting. New Jersey Transit will retain a third party to monitor the program's progress and the battery electric bus performance. The transition to zero emissions vehicles also supports a key goal in New Jersey Transit's 10-year strategic plan, NJT 2030, to promote a more sustainable future for our planet. Moving to the next slide, I'll turn it over to Anthony.
Thank you, Mike. On February 17th, Governor Phil Murphy, New Jersey Department of Transportation Commissioner and New Jersey Transit Board Chair Diane Gutierrez-Cuccetti, along with a host of local and county officials, were on hand to celebrate the first major step of a $250 million redevelopment of the Walter Rand Transportation Center, the longest transportation hub in Camden County. A request for proposal has been released for the design of a new facility to replace the terminal. This $250 million overhaul of the Walter Rand Transportation Center will benefit riders and the people of Camden for decades to come. The Walter Rand Transportation Center is a vital transit hub and economic engine for all of South Jersey. These investments will improve safety, support transit-oriented development in Camden, better accommodate growth throughout Camden County, and provide improved connectivity to Camden's medical, educational, and industrial development areas. They also provide an opportunity to integrate the city center with previously mentioned battery electric buses, building on our aggressive efforts to transition toward a zero-emissions bus fleet. Moving to the next slide, I will turn it over to Ron Nichols to report on light rail.
Thank you, Deanna. Overall, light rail on-time performance was 95.6% in February, down from 97.5% in January. The 12-month rolling average on-time performance for light rail was 97.6%. Overall, light rail ridership was approximately 50% of pre-COVID levels. By line, on-time performance for February is as follows. Hudson Bergen light rail on-time performance was 96.5% in February, down from 97.9% in January. Northern Light Rail on-time performance decreased to 93.8% in February from 98.6% in January. Riverline on-time performance was up slightly to 96.4% in February from 96% in January. Light rail equipment reliability, measured as mean distance between failures, or MDBF, continues to remain relatively static. Norfolk Light Rail improved to 5,433 miles in February from 5,347 miles in January. Hudson Bergen Light Rail MDBF decreased nominally to 90,979 miles in February from 91,050 miles in January. The River Line MDBF improved to 16,669 miles in February from 16,258 miles in January. With respect to the decrease in on-time performance for the Newark Light Rail and Hudson Bergen Light Rail operations, Newark Light Rail was directly affected by the inclement weather and significant snow during the early part of February. Snow removal efforts within Essex County was extremely challenging with the lack of available space to move the volume of snow affected Light Rail's performance. With respect to Hudson Bergen Light Rail, in addition to the snow-related service delays, we also experienced a number of motor vehicles that were following the tracks along the line. New Jersey Transit's Police Department responds to these occurrences promptly, but they do affect on-time performance. Track maintenance and state of good repair work also continues on the Hudson Bergen Light Rail. And last weekend, on March 27th and March 28th, schedule adjustments were made on the Hudson Bergen Light Rail between Garfield Avenue and Liberty State Park. Stations due to scheduled maintenance, track work. We operated a bus bridge on a load-and-go basis between Garfield and Liberty State Park stations. On March 13th, we completed track work on Newark Light Rail and provided substitute busing between Grove Street Station and Branchbrook Park Station, as well as provided New Jersey Transit ambassadors to the affected stations throughout the weekend to assist customers in completing their travel. Moving to the next slide, I will now turn it back over to Deanna. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Social media is an important component of our communications to our light rail customers. On Saturday, February 6th, we use social media as one channel to communicate boarding changes and schedule adjustments between Liberty State Park and Danforth stations on the Hudson Bergen Light Rail to accommodate weekend work. We also leverage social media to help celebrate an anniversary on the HBLR. On February 25th, we marked the 15th anniversary of the Hudson Bergen Light Rail extension that brought service to Tunnelly Avenue, Bergen Line, and Port Imperial stations. Moving to the next slide, I will turn it over to Michelle Styler for the Access Link report.
Thank you, Deanna. Good morning. Access Link on-time performance was 96.7% in February, down from 98.5% in January 2021. The 12-month average for on-time performance is 97.5%, which is beyond our statewide goal of 91.1%. Access Link trip count for the month of February was 64,898, down from January. That was 75,376 trips. The total number of customer case comments in February was 70, down from 83 in January 2021. The top concerns were service delays at 26 and employee performance in the region at 16. Service delay comments were flat from January. The drop in trips can be largely attributed to service suspensions in the beginning of the month due to snowstorm, as well as three less calendar days in February. Many of the delays, such as road condition impacts, were felt in the days following the storms. We have continued our efforts, adding peak hour runs, leveraging technology to improve scheduling and better monitor service, as well as working toward human resource solutions, such as expanded operating hiring efforts and service control training and monitoring. We received 115 commendations for the month of February, with 59 of them for our Access Link Operations Center staff. One customer's daughter called to commend Region 5 driver Joanne Blackney. She wanted to thank the driver for responding quickly when her father passed out in the vehicle. She indicated that the fast reaction saved her father's life. Moving to the next slide. On March 8th, New Jersey Transit launched the Access Link mobile app for customers, providing them with a user-friendly interface for making, canceling, and monitoring reservations. Customers can also update their information and monitor the status of their Easy Wallet account with just a few clicks on the app. Since its introduction in 2019, New Jersey Transit has booked hundreds of thousands of trips through Access Link Online, which allows customers to schedule rides, prepay fares electronically with Easy Wallet, check trip status, and the estimated time of arrival of pickup vehicles. Access Link customers now have access to all of these great features through this new mobile app with an easy-to-use interface, building on our many efforts to improve mobility and enhance the experience for those customers who depend most on public transit. The Access Link app was developed in direct response to valuable customer feedback that a mobile app would improve ease of use and simplify the process of making and canceling reservations. The app provides one-stop shopping for customers who previously would have had to call in and speak to an operator or log into an online account. Customers will be able to easily modify a reservation and check the status of scheduled arrivals with the mobile app. Moving to the next slide. Access Link leverages social media posts for many communications. Critical among them are providing service information and education. During the month of February, we communicated service information related to the winter storm Orlena. We shared tips on how to learn status of your ride, as well as educated on how fares are calculated. Finally, we are using social media to announce and reinforce the retirement of the toll-free Access Link phone number as more and more customers turn to our online and mobile app options. Moving to the next slide, I will turn it back over to Deanna.
Thanks, Michelle. Before I give the customer service report, if you could refer to slide 2, I would like to talk a little about the weather-related events in February. During the month of February, New Jersey was hit with 2 significant winter storms that impacted service, particularly on-time performance. As Winter Storm Orlena bore down on the region, Governor Murphy declared a state of emergency on January 31st, which remained in effect through Tuesday, February 2nd. Due to the declared state of emergency and given the timing of the volume of snow forecast, we determined and communicated that service on February 1st would be suspended system-wide with the exception of the Atlantic City Rail Line. We deployed our vehicles and crews system-wide in preparation for severe winter weather, and they remained out on the system throughout the storm, shoveling, salting, and plowing to keep the system safe for travel. On Tuesday, February 2nd, we began the restoration of service. In the southern part of the state, the Atlantic City Rail Line and Southern New Jersey buses operated a regular schedule, as did Access Link and the River Line operated on a Sunday schedule. For rail, we operated a severe weather schedule level 2, largely a weekend schedule with enhancements to serve stations not normally served on weekends in the central part of the state for the Northeast Corridor, North Jersey Coastline, and Raritan Valley Line. Rail service in northern parts of the state, Pascack Valley, Maine Bergen County, Port Jervis, Montclair Booton, Morristown, and Gladstone Branch rail lines remained suspended as cleanup efforts continued as we faced near-record snowfalls in many of those areas. Northern and central bus routes remained suspended due to road conditions, as did Access Link, Hudson Bergen Light Rail service resumed on a weekend service at the start of the service day, and the North Light Rail resumed a weekend schedule midday. On Wednesday, February 3rd, we provided service system-wide throughout the state. Regular schedules resumed on bus, light rail, Access Link, and the Atlantic City Rail Line. Rail service for all rail lines was upgraded to operate on a severe weather schedule level 1, which is approximately a President's Day schedule with enhancements in service and stations served on a weekend schedule. Full weekday service was restored system-wide on Thursday, February 4th. Winter Storm Viola reached New Jersey on Thursday, February 18th, with heavy snowfall continuing through Friday, February 19th, in the northern part of the state. While a significant storm, New Jersey Transit operated regular scheduled service throughout. Given the conditions, service, especially in the northern part of the state, did experience delays and some cancellations, but continued to operate on a regular weekday schedule to provide as much service as possible as safely as possible. Now I would like you to turn to slide 13. Customer service handled 33,429 operator assisted calls in February. The 13-month rolling average was 40,436 calls. The average speed of answer for the Transit Information Center was 22 seconds in February. Storm-related events during the month resulted in longer call interactions and longer wait times. The agents answered 98% of the calls in February, slightly less than the goal of 99%. Moving to the next slide. New Jersey Transit received 40 commendations system-wide for February. I will read one to highlight the positive impact our staff has on the individual customer experience, in this case, a bus customer. I noticed that I left my satchel after I got off the bus and contacted New Jersey Transit. They directed me to the Lost and Found Department at the Gates Avenue Depot, which is our Greenville garage. I called them. They had found my bag. I went to the depot, and the people there were very helpful and courteous. They went out of their way to help me retrieve my bag and all the items inside. I would like to thank them and New Jersey Transit for their prompt and much appreciated service. Moving to the next slide. On this page, we'll look at social media reach and engagement. New Jersey Transit social media messages were seen over 6 million times, which generated over 128,000 engagements and more than 26,000 visits to njtransit.com. During the month of February, the social media team sent 4,100 messages. This number represents a combination of informational posts and responses to customer inquiries. You'll note a few spikes in engagement. There were spikes that correlated to winter storms Orlena and Viola as we posted updates throughout the storms. Spikes on February 8th were related to posts on the introduction of the new FlexPass pilot ticket option, and there was also our 188 Tips NJT posting. On February 9th, we posted information regarding the PPE vending machines available at multiple New Jersey Transit facilities, including Newark Penn Station, Hoboken, Summit, Metro Park, Secaucus, and New Brunswick. The high engagement from February 12th through the 15th was also due to the launch of FlexPass. Marketing boosted the post on Facebook, which led to over 284,000 people seeing it. Moving to the next slide. Social media was one of the key channels we utilized to advise customers of our safety initiatives related to COVID-19. We use social media to remind customers to pay safe and take advantage of our contactless payment options. We encourage customers to practice safe and preventive measures in light of the pandemic. We promoted the TSA federal guidelines and face mask requirements, as well as touted our mask force efforts as our ambassadors were out again in force in February at terminals and stations. Two other highlights to note in our response efforts to protect our employees and customers. Last Friday, we administered our 1,000th first dose vaccine at our in-house employee clinic at our general office building in Maplewood. This past Saturday, we partnered with Walgreens to set up a vaccine clinic to administer first doses of the Pfizer vaccine exclusively to employees of New Jersey Transit, NJDOT, New Jersey Turnpike Authority, and the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey at our Ferry Street complex in Newark. We administered 765 doses on Saturday, and they will return on April 17th for their second shot. This Saturday, we'll be hosting a second clinic with Walgreens to administer up to 1,000 shots of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine for employees of the same four organizations. We are continuing to look for ways to make the vaccine as widely available as possible for our employees, as their health and safety remain our highest priority. Moving to the next slide. Social media is one of the key channels we utilize. Social media is one of the key channels we utilize to share and provide information posts. During February, we posted messages to honor and celebrate Black History Month, and we highlighted the release of our annual report. We also promoted the partnership between New Jersey Transit and Edge for Vets for free online workshops to support employment opportunities for our veterans and highlighted our purchase of 19 local minibuses for critical transportation services for senior citizens, persons with disabilities, and other transit-dependent individuals through their local communities. Moving to the next slide. Social media also continues to be a critical way we share information beyond operations with our customers. In February, we posted information on the advancement of the New Jersey Transit Innovation Challenge project. We are moving into the next phase of the development process. A request for proposals was issued to generate innovative transportation solutions that expand travel options and capacity between Secaucus and the Meadowlands Complex. We use social media to announce our participation in the Women in Business and Technology Virtual Career Fair. We also promoted the new FlexPass ticket option and celebrated National Heart Health Month. Moving to the next slide. Social media was also an important way to recognize some of our employees. Congratulations to Deputy Chief Financial Officer Jeff Bernstein, who received an honorable mention in Railway Age's Fast Trackers 20 Under 40 Awards in 2021. Chief Information and Digital Officer Lookman Fazel discussed touchless transit solutions on February 17th at the CIO Leadership Live event. Chief of Civil Rights and Diversity Programs, Leota Sanders, was a panelist on February 17th for a program hosted by the National Society of Black Engineers entitled Leading Diverse Groups in STEM. And Chief Engineer Richard Schaefer and Suzanne DiGeronimo participated in a webinar hosted by the American Institute of Architects on post-pandemic changes to transportation. Kudos to all. Moving to the next slide. The New Jersey Transit Police Department also has a robust social media presence. Some examples of their posts in February highlighted. On February 19th, New Jersey Transit Police brought crucial aid to a dog struck by a light rail vehicle. An urgent rescue mission unfolded for the injured canine. New Jersey Transit Police officers responded to reports that a dog got onto the Newark light rail tracks at Park Avenue and was struck and pinned under a light rail vehicle. The officers took great care to remove the colon-injured dog without further trauma, and the dog is thankfully doing well thanks to the quick-acting and compassionate officers. On February 23rd, New Jersey Transit Police officers continue to conduct mask enforcement details, continuing to educate customers to gain compliance and distributing masks to those who needed them. On February 15th, New Jersey Transit Police Department K-9 Jimmy retired after helping protect the New Jersey transit system and the state of New Jersey for over 10 years. Now I would like to turn it over to Chief Trussillo for an update on mask enforcement details as well as any other NJTPD initiatives.
Thank you, Deanna. During the month of February and up and through March 26, the department has conducted 477 mask enforcement details. 23 of those efforts were on restaurant compliance for 50%, no more than 50% occupancy. Also during this time period, we received 76 calls for service related to a mask issue. During this period, officers issued 9 summonses to people for not wearing masks. Unfortunately, we also made 4 arrests. In all these cases, it was for events other than the original mask call. And we made 12 notifications as per the new TSA security directive regarding masks to the TSA TSOC, or Transportation Security Operations Center. And then you heard about K-9 Jimmy retiring. So to keep our K-9 force at full strength, we recently took on 2 more K-9s. And proud to report that these canines are going to be named after employees that we've lost due to COVID. And this past Friday, we introduced K-9 Stokes to honor bus employee Shonda Stokes. And we hosted her family and our CEO and president gave remarks at our police counterterrorism facility in Orange. And K-9 Stokes is undergoing training right now. And in approximately 10 weeks, we'll be at full service. And Deanna, that's my report.
Thank you, Chief. Moving to the next slide. Through our VaxRide initiative, New Jersey Transit supports New Jerseyans in their efforts to get vaccinated against COVID-19. The first phase of this initiative was aimed at ensuring New Jersey residents, especially transit-dependent residents, were able to determine the location of vaccine sites in their area that are accessible via public transit. As part of that effort, we launched a webpage, www.njtransit.com/vaxride. That is an online hub for schedule and route information that provides travel information specific to individual vaccine sites. The VaxRide page features an easy-to-navigate map, which can be used to find vaccination sites that are conveniently served by New Jersey Transit bus, rail, and light rail service. Customers can also download the full list of statewide vaccination sites accessible by public transit in a PDF that is sorted by county. In addition, customers now armed with the locations and addresses can leverage the website online trip planner to determine specific trip itineraries to a vaccine site from their origin location. Customers can also call customer service at 973-275-5555 to speak to an information agent 7 days a week between 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. for additional assistance planning their trip via New Jersey Transit to a vaccination site. Moving to the next slide. New Jersey Transit customers will soon have the chance to earn points for discounts at local businesses through NJT Rewards, the new free NJ Transit Rewards program pilot, where customers earn points towards purchases at participating local businesses. Customers will be able to join the pilot program through the NJ Transit mobile app and begin earning points, which can be redeemed for deals at participating businesses, which includes local shops, restaurants, and attractions, as well as at participating national chains. NJT Rewards is another way to enhance the experience for our customers and hopefully encourage more people to return to transit. NJT Rewards is also a great way to partner with and support local businesses working to recover from the pandemic. To become an NJT Rewards member, customers must purchase rail, bus, and light rail tickets through their NJ Transit mobile app during the pilot. AccessLink customers will also be able to join and earn rewards for their purchases. Customers will soon be able to begin earning points as part of this exciting new program and should sign up to be notified at njtrewards.com. Moving to the next slide. NJ Transit issued press releases in February highlighting key initiatives including the procurement of the new electric buses for limited deployment, NJ Transit advances the Innovation Challenge project for the Meadowlands Complex, the $250 million investment in Walter Rand Transportation Center, and New Jersey Transit Board approved the purchase of new minibuses for local transportation programs. That concludes the operations and customer service report.
Thank you. I will now poll board members. Vice Chair Fulton, any questions or comments?
Yes, good morning. And I'd start off by saying excellent report. Very comprehensive. It spans much of the New Jersey Transit business and sheds light on a lot of, I believe, innovative thinking, proactive thought. I see the rewards program. I look at the Vax Ride program. I see the way you are calling out and recognizing employees across the board. Just a well-done report. Thanks, everybody who contributed to it. A couple of questions. And first one, I'll start off with a comment made by Mr. Cliff. I, too, saw the Amtrak article several times and noted that Amtrak was extraordinarily positive, even went so far as to say they did better than they thought they were going to do. And so with that in mind, my question for whoever wants to take it is, how does their progress and their optimism with regard to the work that they're currently doing lay against efforts to advance the tunnel? And I guess the other part of that would be, how does that then color the London report in terms of the way the region could approach rehabilitating the Hudson River tunnels?
Maybe Board Member Fulton, it's Kevin. At least on the Amtrak, maybe I could make some brief comments. Certainly, we are working very excited, working with the new team at USDOT and the Biden administration on advancing the Gateway program. I think you're aware that we are working together with Port Authority Amtrak to stand up both states and the federal government to stand up the Gateway Development Commission. So there's a lot of focus and a lot of excitement to do that. I think obviously Portal Bridge is part of the Gateway program. We've already got a great first start with that. We'll be having the final bids due for the portal on next week. for the pre-qual. So we see a lot of positive momentum when it gets to the actual tunnel. We are working expeditiously, certainly as part of NJT has a key role in providing the documents for the EIS for a ROD, I think you've seen in the public, where USDOT has, Secretary Buttigieg has even said that they are hoping to get a record of decision on that by end May. So there is a lot of excitement and a lot of hard work going in that, again, working through with the partners. As far as the London Bridge study, I think that, you know, there were some interesting points made up, but Amtrak, you know, owns and has responsibility for the tunnels and the practical aspects of being able to run, you know, for us to continually run service, particularly as we're coming out of the pandemic and seeing growth coming back, both on our rail side, and I know Amtrak has seen that as well, if you could stop service for a period of time, for a long period of time, that's one thing. But the focus really is on getting these the new tunnels built to be able to do the extensive rehab that is required. There are different suggestions in the LBA study that were interesting, but when you look at the practical aspects, you know, from a operating viewpoint that both New Jersey Transit and Amtrak have, there's limited, realistically, we're going to be operating there very limited practicality. So the focus really is on getting the expediting the EIS and getting the new tunnels going. And we certainly coordinate with Amtrak on the operating side to allow them to maximize what they can do to do the repairs of the existing tunnels until the new tunnels are built.
So I guess the point I'm trying to extract is the nature of the Amtrak repairs and the success that they're having, and I don't want to, you know, create words or notions, but are they temporary and therefore it's an apples and oranges comparison, or is there any thought that the techniques that they are using now can be applied more broadly, thereby making repairs to the tunnel perhaps quicker and less expensive?
I think I'd really have to defer on that to Amtrak. We work with their engineering and their schedule, their labor. Again, some of the things were academic or may have been tried elsewhere in the world. But at the end of the day, we look at what they have to do to deliver. From their judgment and what we've seen from our engineering, we respect their judgment on how best to move forward on doing the interim maintenance of those tunnels.
So you're characterizing, or it's being characterized as interim maintenance as compared to some long-lasting repairs.
That's right. You know, the ultimately you need a real overhaul of those tunnels. The kind of work that was in the article and what they're doing is, you know, is interim, is dealing with some of the maintenance of more of a state of good repair of the existing, but it's not a complete overhaul. You know, like on our rail cars, when we do a midlife overhaul after so many years versus your 92-day maintenance cycle, the current work is, you know, more the state of good repair, not a really complete overhaul that those tunnels after 100 years deserve.
Understood. Thank you. That's the point I was trying to get to. So moving on from there, a comment was made regarding a canceled trip report. I'm looking forward to seeing it also, hopefully soon. Third comment I'll make is the one I said I would make every time with regard to mean time. Jim, you pointed to it, but hopefully there too I will, and maybe I should formally request a report of sort if I didn't previously, so that we can keep our eye on that. I'd like to understand, what the trends are, and then have a broader, comprehensive discussion about what does it mean. And I know a lot of it has to do with fleet age and the like, but I think it would be helpful to have a report and then a more narrowly focused conversation about that, because again, it's still trending down. So it gives me pause for concern. Having said that, I like the approach that you guys are taking with the trends. I believe Board Member Nara made the request directly, and so I'm happy to see that you're responsive to it. So I have a question about how do you actually collect the trend information?
Cedric, it's Anthony. I could answer that. So we use our customer relationship management platform to document, receive, process customer feedback, and share that feedback. Every operations unit has a dashboard where they can actually access trends in bus routes, in issues, specific trains, issues last 7 days, last 30 days, so they can identify trends as they're happening through the through the dashboards that reflect the customer feedback. And we also each month meet with the operations units to review that feedback and those dashboards and the trending items, and then talk about actions taken and how to address recurrence of those issues. So we've got a pretty comprehensive process in place that allows us to readily identify trends in feedback across the system.
And I'm hopeful that you will, as you continue, you may have been doing it before, but as time moves along, you continue to share it with us as board members so that we have a sense of it. I might go so far as to suggest if you could include a table inside of the actual report, so that we can be looking at what either that anyone is talking to, whether it be Mike, Jim, or whomever, and because I think it's important to see exactly what the customers are saying, and then to lay that against the actions that New Jersey Transit is taking, because so often we hear comments made in broad strokes, and the question becomes whether or not that's reflective as a trend or an isolated incident. So, and with the number of movements that you guys have on any single day across modes, it's likely something is going to go wrong. But the real importance is to make sure we're looking at the trends to attend to them, given that there's not unlimited resources. So thank you for the trends. I would like to see them more formally reported and represented in the monthly material so that we can continue to have these kind of conversations. And then finally, to dig a little bit into the closed rail cars, just to, in my own mind, clarify what that means. So I'm going to make a statement, then I'll ask someone to correct where I'm wrong. So at the beginning of a trip, the decision is made that X number of train cars will be closed. As more passengers come on board and as you reach the 50%, you will then open more cars to maintain the 50% per car. And I'm imagining the issue is that people see cars that are not available, and they're commenting or upset or however you would want to characterize that they are not able to access their cars, and hence the discontent. So I'll end that because I'm not sure that's correct, but that's what I thought I heard.
Hey, this is Jimmy. Good morning. It's close. So during the rush hour periods, all trains are required to have all cars open, regardless of ridership. The 50% rule that you're referring to is for off-peak times. So when the train's required to have and it's different based on which line, they're required to have a minimum number open, and then if the train starts to fill up and reach that 50% capacity, then they would be required to open more cars.
Okay. And people don't always like that, I guess, because it may change depending on the time in which they're riding the train.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. That concludes my remarks. And again, really, really good report. Keep it coming. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Gordon, any questions or comments?
Yes. First, my thanks also for an excellent report. I share Vice Chair Fulton's interest in trying to understand whether there are any lessons to be learned from the Amtrak experience and whether there are implications for the cost and approach to the Gateway tunnels. And so I'd certainly join him in wanting to learn as much as I can about that. Secondly, I'd like to just respond to Adam Reich's questions about the status of a customer advocate. I can tell you that after the last board meeting, board members were asked to offer any comments on the job description that had been submitted to the board. A number of us did that. Those responses were shared with all board members, I believe, last Friday. So this is still front and center for us. It's unclear to me when decisions will be made, but we are certainly focused on the customer advocate position. I have no other comments. Thanks again for a great report.
Thank you. Board Member Rasmussen, any comments, questions?
No questions, but yeah, excellent report. I agree with my colleagues here. And then additionally, I was also was going to ask the question for some clarity on the work during the tunnels and what that means for Gateway. I guess the only comment I would have is it's my understanding that even at max capacity with the existing tunnels, that would not be sufficient for the overall ridership that we perceive to have for the future. And so, again, from my readings, it would be that the Gateway tunnels would be necessary regardless of how well maintained the current tunnels are or any improvements that could be possibly made to them. And I'll conclude my comments with that remark.
Thank you. Board Member Caulfield, any questions or comments?
Thanks to Vice Chair Fulton. I had a question on the rail car, the procedure for the closures, that, and Jimmy explained it well in response to his question, so thanks.
Thank you. Next is the cost of service update, Michael Cork.
Good morning, board members and members of the public. This slide presents key performance indicators related to our cost of service. In February, across all modes and on an average per passenger basis, we recognized revenues of approximately $2.89 on costs of $25.23 for a recovery ratio of 11%. This is an 8.3% decrease from January. Per passenger subsidies of between $9.52 and $49.73 were required for bus, rail, and light rail service, with fare box recoveries of 20%, 10%, and 7%, respectively. Access Link's recovery ratio was 3%. We also continue to present our fare box recovery ratio corporate-wide and by mode, which can be found on slide 2. Thank you, and that concludes my report.
Thank you. Vice Chair Fulton, any questions or comments?
No questions, thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Gordon, any questions or comments?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Rasmussen, any questions or comments?
No questions, no comments. Thank you, Joyce.
Thank you. Board Member Caulfield, any questions or comments?
Nope, I'm good, thanks.
Thank you. Next is the COVID-19 travel survey results, Susan O'Donnell.
Good morning, everybody. I know time is short, so I will go through these slides as quickly as possible. Slide number 2 gives you some background on the 3 surveys we've conducted so far, including the most recent one conducted in December, where we got 54,000 responses. Moving on to slide 3, this slide shows the percent of customers that traveled at least once in the past 7 days during COVID. By their pre-COVID modes. So on the left, you have work, and on the right, you have non-work. And you can see on the work charts that the percent of customers that traveled at least once has increased in December compared to the previous surveys. Well, on the non-work side, you see that local bus, North Jersey, local and South Jersey have increased, but New York Interstate Rail and Light Rail have all decreased a little, which again, could be because of the time when the survey was done in December, COVID cases were increasing, so people might have been more reluctant to make non-work trips. Also, it was getting colder and not as nice weather-wise as it was in June. Moving on to slide four, this is the mode. So of the people that were traveling on the last slide, we asked them what mode they were using. So you can see for North Jersey Local Bus, 89% of the customers who used Local Bus before COVID were now traveling in December also using Local Bus. And in all cases, the percent using the same mode has increased in December. Moving on to slide five, this shows trip frequency of work trips. And each chart has three sets of bars. The first set is before COVID, the middle set is June, and the right set is December. If you draw your attention to the red bars, those are the customers that said that they were traveling 5 days per week. When you look at the North Jersey Local and South Jersey charts, you can see that the 5 day per week percentages, December compared to before COVID, are fairly similar, 44% for North Jersey Local compared to 49% before COVID. While if you look over at the New York Interstate Rail and Light Rail, there still is quite a difference in the percent of customers that are traveling in December 5 days a week compared to before COVID. Moving on to slide six, this slide shows the responses to two questions. The first is, do you have a specific schedule? Again, this was asked of customers that were making work trips. We asked them if they had a specific schedule that they go in each week. And the burgundy text at the top of each chart shows the percent that said they had a set schedule, ranging from about 71 to 78%. If they had a set schedule, we then asked, what days of the week do you go in? And you can see it's pretty evenly proportioned among the weekdays. And I think that represents a combination of the customers who are traveling 5 days a week and the customers who are traveling only a day or two or, you know, less than 5 days a week, that either employees and or employers are doing a good job of spreading out employees coming into the office on each of the days of the week and not kind of having everybody coming in at the middle of the week. On this slide, again, we asked if they had a set schedule. So this slide is the customers that said that they didn't come in on a set schedule. So you see that, again, it is in burgundy and is anywhere from like 22 to 30% of customers said they didn't have a set schedule. And we asked them, over the last several months, what factors have you considered when deciding to travel to the office? And you can see that the transit schedule, personal schedule, and weather were high for Local Bus customers, while for the New York market, business needs slash coming in for a meeting were also high. Moving on to slide eight, this represents responses to several questions. The top set of bars was the ticket types, and you can see monthly pass usage has decreased, and one-way and 10-trip has increased. In the lower left is where customers purchase their ticket. App usage and vending machines are among the high locations that customers get tickets. In the middle lower chart, we asked customers that said they used the mobile app, we asked if they had used the mobile app before COVID. So these are new mobile app users, and you can see Light Rail is the highest, possibly due to the fact that now you can buy one-way Light Rail tickets on the app. And then the final chart in the lower right is the payment method, and electronic methods are all high, with cash being like 26% for bus customers. Moving on to slide nine, this also is customers that were traveling for work. We asked them what time do they depart, and we compared before COVID departure time shown in gray to December departure time shown in burgundy. The hash bars are customers that said they departed between 5 to 7 a.m. And you can see if you follow the hash bars, they're all reasonably close. before COVID compared to December. The solid bars are 7 to 9 a.m., and you can see that there's a bit of a difference, especially in the New York market. And then if you look at the overall bar, you kind of see that whole 5 to 9 a.m. period. And again, those differences show more in the New York market. Slide 10, we asked customers that were traveling to rate their satisfaction with cleanliness at stations and stops and onboard New Jersey Transit vehicles using our traditional customer satisfaction scale of 0 to 10. And you can see that they, that in general, the satisfaction was about the same or better than before COVID. For customers that gave us a score of 4 or less, so that would be an unsatisfactory score, we asked them what areas need improvement, and they could select multiple choices. So the tables on the bottom show the responses, and the percent highlighted in burgundy is the high percent for that mode. And you can see that litter and seats and spills on stains were the high areas in need of improvement. And finally, in the lower right corner, there's a little burgundy box. As was mentioned earlier, we now have PPE vending machines. They were being rolled out around the time of this survey. So we asked customers if they were aware that we had these vending machines, and if they were, we asked them if they used them. And then if they used them, we asked their satisfaction. So the PPE vending machines got a rating of 7.34. Moving on to slide 11, we asked about how many other customers were wearing face covering, and you can see, again, these bars show either most customers or all or almost all, so about 90% in all modes, and the face covering usage increased from June to December, so that's good too. In slide 12, we talked about how easy has it been to maintain a safe personal space, and we took customers sort of on their journey from purchasing a ticket all the way to exiting the station, and these percentages are also high, although they're a little bit lower for riding on transit where space is more constrained. Slide 13 is some demographic comparisons. On the left chart, we asked customers to self-identify as essential workers. And again, our percentages are high. There's a little decrease in the New York market, which might indicate some new customers from new industries are starting to travel. And similar to the previous survey, we asked customers, the two charts show customers that own one or zero autos at the top and the bottom that earn incomes less than $75,000. And you can see a high percentage of North Jersey local and South Jersey bus customers fall into those two categories. Moving on to slide 14, this was asked of customers that before COVID said they used New Jersey Transit to travel by bus, but that they had not made a trip to work, that we asked customers that traveled to work, not by bus, sorry, that traveled to work before COVID, and they had said in December that they had not made a work trip in the last 7 days of the survey in December. So we asked them, why didn't you make a work trip? And as shown in blue, shows people working from home. You can see the New York market is very high, in the 80s plus percentage. In the orange is customers that lost their job or furloughed, and you can see for South Jersey bus and North Jersey local bus that anywhere from 22 to 36% of customers said they weren't traveling because they had been furloughed. And then the yellow is customers that weren't traveling for other reasons, possibly taking care of children or taking care of someone who's sick or on vacation. Moving on to slide 15, we asked customers that were working from home, if they no longer had to work from home and must travel to their office, how would they get to their work site? And this is just, I just showed the same mode versus private auto. And you can see that the same mode has declined from June to December, and auto has increased. But again, it's important to note that the survey was done in December after Thanksgiving happened and cases were increasing. So I think there was a little bit more concern at that time. Moving on to slide 16, this is the results of two questions. The top charts talk about, the question was, once guidance, government guidance allowed the businesses start reopening, if it was up to you, when would you prefer to travel back to your work site? So if you look at the orange bars at the top, those are customers anywhere from 27 to 36% that said they're ready to go back like right away or in a couple of weeks. If you look at the purple bars in the middle, that's anywhere from 18 to 26%. Those were customers that felt they would be ready to go back sometime between May and August. And if you look down at the bottom in the blue, anywhere from 16 to 21% said, I'm not comfortable going back at all. We also asked customers if their employer had set a date for worksite return. There really was only enough data to share from the New York markets, the bus and rail, which you can see on the bottom. And it's sort of a toss-up between late summer, late spring, summer, and the period right now. Moving on to slide 17, we asked customers that hadn't ridden December, regardless of what purpose they would take New Jersey Transit for. We asked all customers that said they hadn't traveled in December in the last 7 days, when you start riding New Jersey Transit again, will you ride more, less, or about the same? This slide shows North Jersey Local, South Jersey, and Access Link, and you can see about 50% or more said that they're going to ride the same, and another 39 for bus and 18% for Access Link said that they were going to ride less often. We asked them what are the reasons why they thought they were going to ride less often and not comfortable riding because of COVID was high for these modes and markets. On the next slide, it's the same tables, but charts, but for interstate rail, interstate bus, rail, and light rail. And you can see a little bit more of an even split between under 50%, 44 to 49% saying they're going to ride less, and 46 to 49% saying they're going to ride about the same. For this group, the top reason was working from home and a little bit of not riding because of COVID was the second choice, second highest. This slide, we asked, it was a series of questions. So we asked customers that had traveled for work, how many days did you or do you expect to? So the green set of bars are how many days did you or did you travel to the work site before COVID, work from home or off from work? And you can see for the gray that almost everybody traveled about 5 days a week. To work, and rail was about 4.5. In the burgundy, we asked the same set of questions to customers in December. What were they doing? And you can see North and South Jersey bus were about 4. In New York bus, interstate and light rail were about 2.5, and rail was about 1.5. Then we said, after the COVID crisis is over, how many days do you expect to be at the work site? And you can see bus is back up almost to 5. New York Interstate Bus and Light Rail are about 4, and rail is at 3.3. We asked our overall satisfaction question, you know, how satisfied are you with New Jersey Transit, same 10-point scale, and you can see that the satisfaction is about the same, or on Interstate Bus and Rail, even higher than it was before COVID. And to wrap up my presentation, I've been sharing this data with the operating groups, with our pandemic planning group, and with yourselves. We're thinking about doing the next travel survey sometime in the spring. We're still discussing that. And I'm ever so hopeful that we could maybe go back to the customer satisfaction survey in the fall. And thank you. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Vice Chair Fulton, any questions or comments?
This is very good work. Certainly appreciate it. Plenty of data here to chew on, and I find it interesting that we I'm looking at slide 10 with regard to cleanliness, and you know it's always a tough area given the amount of real estate, but I think this is the kind of information that's just helpful all the time, before COVID, post COVID, and I'm glad you're keeping your eye on it. Just an overarching comment with regard to how we performed before COVID and post COVID, or during COVID, and it seems to me that I have this natural belief that it would be easier to get higher marks across the board, particularly in rail, given that you're dealing with less people in the system. Notwithstanding that, though, it seems that the cleanliness, for example, it's a little bit better, but it's around the same. I think the point I'm making here is that it's really, really difficult to move those numbers unless there's sort of transformation in the form of, my experience, building new infrastructure where it's so obvious that people are more inclined to be out the park and over the top than feeling like it's a cleaner version of the same. Just me making commentary. I'll end on that note. I know time is of the essence, but excellent report, and I look forward to the next one.
Thank you. Board Member Gordon, any questions or comments?
Yes. Again, good data and very interesting data that I hope we'll continue to collect so we can make some judgments about trends. My main takeaway is that the marketplace is still in a great state of flux, and that makes it a challenge to try to plan for how we're going to provide the service in the future. But I would emphasize the importance of continuing to collect data like this on a regular basis so we have an idea of where the numbers are heading so we can plan accordingly. That's all I'll say. Okay. Thank you very much. Excellent report.
Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Rasmussen, any questions or comments?
No questions, no comments. Thank you, Joyce.
Thank you. Board Member Caulfield, any questions or comments?
No, very useful report. And I agree with Board Member Gordon, think, you know, continuing collecting this data as the market comes back and there's still some uncertainties is very useful and important to keep doing. Thanks.
Thank you. Board members, that concludes the agenda for the Operations and Customer Service Committee. We will now transition to the Administration Committee meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.